Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, I think it was the National Journal who just a few days ago put out the fact that of the 15 seats most likely to flip in 2014, 13 are currently held by Democrats. And one of those, certainly, is Mark Pryor in Arkansas. It's a state that very loudly fired Blanche Lincoln overwhelmingly in 2010, and he's in a dogfight right now with Congressman Tom Cotton, and a lot of folks in that state still might not know a lot about Tom Cotton. So Pryor definitely knows he's in trouble, and recently he released this TV ad.
I'm not ashamed to say that I believe in God and I believe in His Word. The Bible teaches us no one has all the answers, only God does. And neither political party is always right. This is my compass, my North Star. It gives me comfort and guidance to do what's best for Arkansas. I'm Mark Pryor, and I approve this message because this is who I am and what I believe.
Now, Jim, of course, if a Republican had a TV ad with an open Bible, the left would be going absolutely ballistic. As a Christian, I certainly don't have any problem with that. And anyone who runs for office, you would expect them to act on their deepest held beliefs when they get to office. The issue, though, here is that Mark Pryor doesn't explain what he made a mistake about. And if you look at his voting record, he has not retracted his position on Obamacare. And a lot of folks on Twitter this morning are talking about the fact that he's pretty ardently pro-choice, and that doesn't seem to line up much with the word either.
I find it a really infuriating ad. This is not a negative ad. This is not a nasty ad. I just feel this completely disingenuous, and not so much in his faith. Apparently, the National Republican Senatorial Committee put out a release on this that Tom Cotton and a few other Arkansas Republicans contended was counterproductive, suggesting that it said that Pryor was disingenuous in his faith, or suggested something wrong. Here's the two problems I have here. The first is, as you said, if you're going to ask for forgiveness, then come out and tell us what the heck you want forgiveness for, right? If you're voting for Obamacare was a mistake and you don't like this monstrosity that's being imposed upon the country, then turn around and support repeal, all right? Don't give me this soft focus, candlelight, God forgives me, why can't you routine? Part of true penance requires open, clear acknowledgement of what you've done wrong. I mean, you know, I think there's a Toronto mayor who could offer a couple examples on this. If you're not going to get into that, I'm not even sure what the point of the ad is. But then the second thing is, look, this is in the mode of Ed Schultz on MSNBC yesterday saying that God is a supporter of Obamacare. Greg, I am tired of these maniac Christians trying to shove their theology down my throat, aren't you? My tongue is a little bit in cheek of that, but it's an observation that, you know, all Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and all the folks who are literally making federal cases when you make Merry Christmas or something like that, who are worried about this, you know, somehow think we're walking around in the Scarlet Letter or some sort of puritanical, overtly religious theocracy. An embattled Democrat in a red state can openly hold up the Bible and say, this is my compass, this is my guidepost, and nobody on the left side of the aisle gives a tinker's hoot about that. And it's ridiculous that basically they believe that it's perfectly okay to use the Bible as boob bait for bubbas. The same way that Barack Obama claimed that he believed that marriage was between a man and a woman back in 2008. Nobody really believed that. The answer was, I need to take that position in order to win the swing states, because if I say I support gay marriage, if I say what I really think, I'm going to lose votes. The left has a remarkable tolerance for this kind of political cynicism, and it kind of suggests that when they throw a fit over Christian conservatives, it suggests that they don't really mean it. They don't really care. As long as you have a D after your name, if you have an R after your name, they'll hate you whether your voting pattern is Ted Cruz or whether it's Susan Collins. And it suggests the utter emptiness of what constitutes, you know, the liberal and kind of left of center thinking that we see today.
Yeah.
And this is our good martini.
Yeah, if you're wondering why it's the good martini, it's because Mark Pryor knows that he can't possibly defend his record. And the longer this campaign goes on, the less he's going to be able to get away with that. And so he's going to be called on the mat on his record, and it's not going to be be that great for him.
Shifting away from issues into cultural identity, which is a really kind of striking one. And considering how much the rest of the election of recent years have come to be focused upon cultural identity, right? I mean, remember how many people didn't approve of the job Obama was doing, didn't agree with him on the issues, but he scored so much better on the cares about people like me. Mark Pryor doesn't want this election to be about Obamacare. They want it to be about, boy, he's really Christian. And he's really hoping that somebody will make a criticism of him based upon that, and that he can play the embattled Christian on this. It's a remarkably cynical game, and I hope that Arkansas voters don't fall for it.
On to martini number two now. And of course, given all the horrific rollout problems with Obamacare and just the structural flaws that we've been talking about for really years here, the president's popularity is hurting. Republicans are going to benefit either by the fact that they've resisted in principle on Obamacare all the way, or the fact that they just weren't part of the people that passed it. Momentum seems to be in their favor. However, House Republicans might be doing their very best to try and kill this momentum by passing immigration reform that doesn't specifically look like what the Senate did, but when you add up all the individual pieces, it will. And the reason we have to believe that that's true is because Luis Gutierrez, who is absolutely the most outspoken supporter of amnesty in the House of Representatives, believes that the Republican House approach is ultimately going to get him exactly what he wants. So, Jim, I think most conservatives would believe that if there's any way to dispirit the base when they've got a lot of reasons to be motivated next year, this would pretty much do it.
There's a couple things that are kind of frustrating about this. You know, we have a lot of good policy reasons to argue against something we see as a that amounts to a path to citizenship as a de facto amnesty. Even if you thought it was good policy, it's not necessarily good politics for the Republican Party because, one, a huge chunk of the base is adamantly opposed to it and very passionate about this issue. You look at the folks who support it. You know, if Republicans back this, it's not going to instantaneously change the numbers amongst Hispanic voters, Latino voters. Latino voters have a lot more concerns than immigration policy. Unfortunately, on a lot of those issues, they're pretty darn to the left. So the idea that, well, if we just flip on this one issue, they'll support us is a fallacy and probably, you know, magical thinking there. But then the other thing, I keep going back to this because I was so surprised by it, was that Esquire's The New Center poll. They toss out the folks who are diehard conservatives. They toss out the folks who are diehard liberals. Amnesty did not do well at all. There is not this really big base of people who are ready to fall in love with the Republican Party if they were to embrace amnesty. In fact, the attitude of this group in the center was pretty punitive, in fact. And basically, if you had come into this country illegally, they don't want to give you any breaks. They want to see you, you know, they want to toss you back to your home country. Now, I'm one of those folks who feels like you talk of the estimated 11 million illegal immigrants in this country, and there are some folks who are good folks who might make good Americans someday, Manuel the busboy, so to speak, or there are folks who are not good folks, drug dealers and gang members and stuff like that. I'm not a fan of any plan that doesn't do a lot of effort to sort through all that and make sure that we're not letting the bad guys stay and make sure that the folks who might be good Americans at least pay some sort of price for breaking the law. Because, you know, in one case, I remember during the fight we had over this towards the tail end of the Bush years, the IRS was going to require illegal immigrants to estimate and pay taxes for three of the past 5 years. Greg, wouldn't you love that deal?
Yes, I would if I hadn't already paid, yeah.
Guess what? You get to be a citizen and you don't have to pay taxes for two of the past 4 years. None of us got that deal. We didn't do anything wrong. So the entire amnesty mentality seems unbelievably wrongheaded. The idea that Boehner would, you know, looking at the polling numbers right now, it's very tough to make the argument that Republicans are paying this severe price for not immediately passing the Senate deal. By the way, the very same Senate deal that Marco Rubio is now running away from. So it just seems like a complete misreading of the public moment to think that, boy, Republicans are really in trouble right now. They got to pass amnesty a de facto amnesty as quick as possible.
On to martini number three now, and this broke yesterday afternoon. I think most folks who are paying attention to the media know the story of Martin Bashir a few weeks ago on MSNBC. He was criticizing Sarah Palin for suggesting that Obama's decrees are turning us into slaves. He then talked about what some of the most heinous treatment of slaves looked like, and including a slave defecating into the mouth of another slave, and said that is the treatment that Sarah Palin deserves. And he ultimately apologized. Then he went on a quote-unquote vacation. And then after meeting with MSNBC officials yesterday, he resigned, which probably means he was forced out. I'm sure all six of his viewers will be devastated by that, but Jim, couldn't happen to a worse guy or a worse outfit like MSNBC.
On the one hand, it was nice to see, took a day or two, and all of a sudden he gives this apology. It was not your typical, I'm sorry if you were offended policy. He seemed to really seem to recognize that he was starting to sound like a raving maniac, that it was an obnoxious and awful thing to say. And that he began, almost sounded like he realized he'd turned into a monster and that he didn't want to do this. This wasn't what he went into television and journalism for, and that he wanted to change. And then I listened a few days later, and it was not as bad as the Palin comment, but this kind of snide, you know, snarky, dismissive tone that is dismissive of all other viewpoints was pretty much still there. It's not like, you know, three ghosts had visited him in the middle of the night and he had this Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, the ghosts of broadcast future had reached him and he's, you know, decided to turn over a new leaf. So then you kind of look over the fact, and I had a good chunk of this in the Morning Joe. I mean, he said one dumb thing after another. I know he compared Ted Cruz to David Koresh, frequently comparing the NRA to Adolf Hitler. I mean, basically it's, you know, Florida Governor Rick Scott to Stalin. You know, it's basically it's like, you know, take one from column A, a Republican in the news, and column B is history's greatest monsters. Once every couple of weeks, he just felt the need to take one from column A and one from column B and assert that there is no difference between current Republican lawmakers and the most evil people in human history. I think you and I were scheduled for next week, Greg, and I think Genghis Khan was who we were going to get compared to. Either that or, you know, Oog, the first really mean caveman or something like that. It's hard to believe, A, that this is really an issue of just this one Palin comment. It's a long series of comments of him saying obnoxious things. And by the way, not just obnoxious things about Republicans. He was at some Asian American journalist convention and just sounded like a horny loon because it was very sexual, vulgar comments. And it was just creepy. And you know, you can't imagine that he ever would have thought that's those sorts of comments were okay. So he got slapped on the wrist again for that one. And, you know, you look at his ratings in the time slot. Bashir was not knocking him out compared to Neil Cavuto. It's tough to believe that MSNBC was really that torn up about the possibility of tossing out Bashir, because if you ran a test pattern at 4 p.m., you would probably see, you wouldn't be losing that much worse to Cavuto than you already are, and you wouldn't have to deal with these constant controversies and stuff. And so regular listeners probably know I'm on Chuck Todd and Morning Joe every now and then. But around noon, MSNBC's quality control just goes, you know, falls to pieces. And you know, you got Ed Schultz, you got Lawrence O'Donnell, who keeps challenging people to fist fights. You know, I look at it and I'm like, okay, if I were a liberal, would I enjoy it? And the short answer is I don't think I would. I just don't know. And the ratings in some places are okay and other places not so great. All In or Going Deeper or whatever. What's the extraordinarily phallic title of Chris Hayes' show?
All In is the title of the Chris Hayes show.
All In. There you go. You just look at MSNBC and wonder what. Like, it's good that they realize that the really obnoxious and hateful stuff isn't where they want to be. How they're going to construct a new identity after becoming the frothing at the mouth network is going to be kind of interesting to see. I'd like to have an open mind. I'm not that wildly optimistic about what the replacements are going to be over there. Maybe Ted Rall is looking for a job. What's Rosie O'Donnell doing these days? You know, you go down your list of Michael Moore, you know, he needs another venue, you know. You're down your list of like loud, garish, lefty personalities, and chances are sooner or later these folks will get an MSNBC. Oh, you know, when we finally get rid of Florida Congressman Alan Grayson, you know, he's probably getting ready to resign from Congress to take the Bashir slot.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.